Okay, so goal of this relatively short but complicated cheer is going to be to talk about abortion, as the title suggests, but to sort of take it to maybe make it as complicated as we possibly could. And by that I mean that I think in general when people discuss abortion, they're thinking, at least when you hear politicians discussing this or maybe some other sharing talking about this topic, they seem to be discussing this issue of like, you know, it's their classic model is maybe a, you know, 25-year-old woman accidentally gets pregnant. Maybe she's in medical school. She's not really, it's not the right time for her to have a child. And just think about having an abortion. And so they have this debate. They're contemplating, can this woman get an abortion now? It's not an ideal time for her. Whatever your feelings are about that or not about that or whatever the halachic analysis would be, I think this question can actually become considerably more complicated if we take it to a situation where we're talking about a woman who has a fetal scan and discover that there's something wrong with the fetus. So I'll give you a real world example of this, and we'll discuss some of the different halachic opinions regarding to abortion, and then try to figure out how would they apply to this particular situation. So, real life case. This is a woman goes for a full fetal scan, at a full anatomy scan at approximately 20 weeks gestation. She shows up to the OB, and unfortunately, after they do the ultrasound, the OB lets her know that, first of all, the fetus is IUGR. Is everyone med students? Am I translating as I go? This is a small. It's a small baby. It's a small baby. In addition, they have some findings. They have bilateral cerebral hemorrhage. They're bleeding in the brain, basically. Corpus callosum dysplasia. They don't really have that much of a brain. Echogenic bowel. They didn't actually develop a GI system at all. And they also notice, in addition to all of that, that there's poor diastolic flow in the umbilical cord. Right? The heart isn't really pumping all that much. It's not really working all that well. But importantly, there's still a pulse. This fetus is still alive, but it's clearly going to have a couple different things could happen to this thing. Right? One is that it's going to die very soon in utero. The other one is that she can. This fetus can actually make it for a full gestation, actually make it through a full pregnancy, maybe can even survive delivery, and then will probably die shortly thereafter. They're not going to make it that much longer, not with all of these findings. So the question is, what can this woman do in this situation? So before we answer that question, let's take a step back. And very quickly, I assume most people have heard some sort of shiur on abortion before, but we'll give a general overview of different halachic options, halachic opinions about the permissibility of, or the issa, the prohibition of doing an abortion, and then try to figure out how that would apply to this case. So if you look, the issue is when you think about abortion in general in a halachic context, you may search through all of the Talmud Mitzvot, right? You try to find exactly what is the prohibition of abortion, and nowhere in the Torah does it say anywhere, thou shalt not abort. It's not an issa in the Torah, right? It doesn't exist. So you have to basically come up with, different ways, different sources to try to figure out what exactly this prohibition may be. So in general, you have basically three different options, right? Number one, by the way, feel free to interrupt me at any point. You know, no problem. Go for it. Number one is maybe the easiest to understand, but most people claim that this person may or may not have actually said it. That's the option of the Ma'arit. It's possible that the Ramban said the same thing. But the argument is that the abortion is basically a form of chabala. It's a form of wounding. There's an issur to cut myself. I'm not allowed to make myself bleed. So similar idea. I won't be able to do an abortion. An abortion is basically just another limb attached to the woman's body, happens to be inside of uterus, happens to be if I don't touch it in 9 months from now or however many months, it's going to pop out and be a little baby. But for now, it's just another limb attached to this woman. And so the only issue, the only prohibition of abortion would be some form of chabala, some form of issur of wounding. Importantly, or interestingly, if someone wants to take a morning after pill, you know, protection, whatever it was, and they're afraid that they might get pregnant, going to this position, it probably shouldn't be an issue. Right? Just taking a pill, who cares? It's not a chabala, it's not a limb attached to the woman. The egg is probably still floating around somewhere, it probably still hasn't attached to anything. Morning after pill, according to this, wouldn't be abortion, it would be totally mutter. Which is interesting because whatever that court case was that said that your morning after pill is considered an abortion legally, according to this, at least, it wouldn't be halachically, this would not be an abortion. The other way of thinking about this is that it's some sort of prohibition of wasting seed, wasting sperm. There's possibly some sort of iser that you're not allowed to waste sperm cells, and this would be a manifestation of that iser. It's an interesting, if you think about it, it's like a little interesting little jump. Because the way you get to this point is with a lot of agadotas, with a lot of midrashim, right? You have to assume that basically the way they start off with is, how do I know that wasting sperm is aser? Well, I look at the story of Yehuda and Tamar, Yehuda's children, right? One of them was married to Tamar, and then apparently he didn't want to get her pregnant. He was afraid she wouldn't look pretty afterwards or something like that. Apparently, pregnant woman back then didn't glow, so he was worried about that. But whatever it was, he was basically engaged in some form of contraception. It sounds like what he was doing was, he was using the withdrawal method, right? He would basically, he would be with her, and then he would pull himself out and waste the sperm, so it wasn't going inside the woman. It's apparently an ineffective method of contraception, but still, that's what he was attempting to do, and because of that, he got killed, right? That's what Torah says, he dies. And with the Midrashim, right, that's the version that you get. You end up with, he died because he was wasting sperm. So you end up with this idea that if you look at these Midrashim, and then the Arizal goes nuts with this sort of stuff, the Zohar goes nuts with this sort of stuff, and basically makes it comes to this conclusion that wasting seed is this Isser Deraisa, it's an Isser Ritzicha, it's really, really bad, right? Now, if you would have just given me all those sources and tried to give them to me in some sort of halachic context, I would have said, what do I care? Like, these aren't serious halachic sources. Yeah, the Midrashim, maybe it's important, it could teach us some sort of moral lesson, but it's really not significant in halachic context. Except I get stuck, because Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Beit Yosef, right, decides to quote this as halacha l'maisa. He quotes it as halachically binding, that you are not allowed to waste seed. And so if I take that, if I now use it from a serious halachic context, when we think about abortion, I am now not just thinking simply of Chabala, potentially wounding someone, I have an issue of, I'm also wasting the sperm. The sperm cell had this potential to create life. This sperm cell really had the potential to create life, because it actually fertilized an egg, and then I wasted it. So I have now have some sort of issue of abortion because of that, because of wasting seed. Importantly, according to that, you might not be able to take a morning after pill, right? Because now I'm wasting seed again. I've now destroyed the seed that fertilized this egg. Whereas Chabala would be fine, according to this position, it might be a problem. Yeah, of course.
Would you not consider the egg to be the female version
of that? So that's interesting, because there's a Gemara that tells me that females, not only for an egg, but even in regards to sperm cells, do not have a prohibition. The prohibition may only be for a male to engage in some sort of spermicide. But for a female, it may not be. And then if we're having a conversation about birth control, we can end up having an interesting conversation about whether or not you're allowed to use spermicides. If the woman's doing it versus the man doing it, it might be okay, depending on who you ask, as is the case usually with Judaism. But a egg would not have the same status. It would only be true for the sperm cells, which is interesting because, you know, there's only one egg every cycle. For every sperm cell that you have in any sexual act, there's thousands or millions of them. And still, we... not actually doing anything, yeah.
Like, it's not the destruction that just happened.
But that would be the interesting potential question. Yeah. The third one, and the most extreme version, is the Rambam. All right, the Rambam tells me, and he's based off this Mishnah and all that, but the Rambam tells me that the reason why I am not allowed to do an abortion is because it is some form of ritzicha. It's murder, to some degree. It's not regular murder as I murder one of you, but it is some version of murder. And so, according to the Rambam's position, right, you end up with the most chumras that you're possibly going to get with whenever you're thinking about abortion will be within the Rambam's philosophy. Importantly, if the fetus is causing harm to the mother, it's the Mishnah Noholot, and this is how the Rama will explain the Mishnah. If the fetus is causing the mother to be in a situation where her continuing pregnancy will be fatal to her, then according to the Rama, you're allowed to kill the fetus. Why? Not because it's not murder. According to the Rama, it is murder. But we have a general rule that if I'm trying to murder you, you're allowed to murder me first in order to save you. Right? That's a general rule of Rodef, the rule of chasing, I guess, for lack of a better word, right? That's the general halacha. So the same thing would apply with the fetus. The fetus is now trying to kill the mother, so I'm allowed to kill the fetus before it kills the mother. All right, simple math according to the Rambam. This basically ends up with three different ways of thinking about it.
Sorry. So, can you call something a rodent if it's like mental health? In terms of like, is it only like life threatening in a literal sense, or is it life threatening in like a softer way of saying like, you know, severe distress, depression, anguish, you know?
You mean the fetus causing the mother...
Classifying the fetus as a rodent, is that only in the literal sense of threatening the mother's life? Or could it be like let's say she was a rape victim, or she was, like, there's a severe emotional distress that wouldn't result in death of the mother, but in a different kind of way.
Within the reading of the Rambam, death would be literal. Within the simple reading of the Rambam, death would be literal. I mean, if the fetus is not directly going to cause, you know, the mother's now, I don't know, has severe hypertension and you have to end pregnancy
now
or else she's going to die, right? Then it would not be considered a rodent.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. At least according to a literal reading of the Rambam's position. Right, there are definitely different ways of getting around it. We'll discuss some of them, but that would be definitely within the Rambam. That's what the conclusion would be.
Okay.
All right. All of this, by the way, is these are just us trying to find some sort of source, some sort of way of which we can discuss abortion in a halachic context. But it's also, just to remember, the other conversation underlying all of this is, are we having a deraisa conversation or a derabanan conversation? Like, what level of isser is this? Is this simply, you know, something that we could clearly point and say the Torah says this is usher? Maybe this is just like some sort of zera derabanan or something else that we added onto this. That's also the other underlying conversation that's really hiding behind all of this. All of this ends up with basically three different ways of thinking about abortions in a contemporary context. It was a much bigger issue a couple last generation, two generations ago, more than ours, because most of these questions that we have right now weren't really relevant before you had an ultrasound and you can see what was going on, or before you had great options to do an abortion without causing significant harm to the woman. So you are quite limited in when these discussions really became practical. But basically, you end up with three different ways of thinking about this. Rav Moshe is classically, most famously, he is the most stringent of all the other people that discuss this issue. He takes the Rambam's position and he assumes it to its literal sense. And so he would not let you do an abortion unless the fetus is directly causing harm to the mother. That means it would kill the mother if she remains pregnant. Now, I mean, A, that even the most stringent position within Judaism is less strict than the basic Catholic position, because they don't allow you to do an abortion under any circumstances, even if it means causing harm to the mother. But according to Rav Moshe, if it will result in the mother's death because of the pregnancy, I'm allowed to do an abortion.
Can you purposefully put yourself in a place where the baby would threaten the mother's life?
What do you mean by that?
Meaning, like, let's say she is high risk for hypertension, preeclampsia, and like she consults her rabbi, and the rabbi says, like, there's no threat of your life, you really shouldn't. Can she, like, purposefully not take the medicine that the doctors are telling her to take so that it gets to the point where it's threatening her life, and then, or is that... Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, if you end up in that situation, then sure, that would be you. I mean, she'd be allowed to do an abortion. Are you allowed to not take medication that would help you? I mean, I don't think it's medically advisable. It sounds like a terrible idea.
No.
But I understand why you may.
I'm just trying to find a loophole.
Yeah, no, I understand. So I don't know if Ramosha would go that far, as long as it does offer a risk that could endanger her, that would endanger her life. But even within Ramosha's position, what's actually quite interesting is that if the fetus is not directly causing harm, if the pregnancy itself is not what's causing harm to the mother, let's say she's diagnosed with cancer while pregnant, right? And now she has to get chemotherapy. And no one in their right mind is going to give this woman chemotherapy while she's pregnant, so they want to abort the fetus. Right? According to Moshe, you can't abort the fetus in that situation. Because the fetus is not the reason why that woman's life is in danger. The woman's life is in danger is because she has cancer. just pointing out how far you may potentially go within Rav Moshe's position. He does. He says, again, I don't know if anyone asked him this question specifically, but what's interesting is, Rav Moshe, in one of his tshuvot, as opposed to, like, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who gave some testimony to the Knesset, where they both were discussing within the Rambam's position, I don't think Rav Aaron Lichtenstein actually thought like the Rambam's position, but he was suggesting, even within the Rambam's position, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein makes the case, in parentheses, in his argument, he says, and that would mean that if, it's like he's directly responding to Rav Moshe's comment, says, and that means if the fetus is causing harm to the mother, even if it's not directly because of the pregnancy, I'd be allowed to abort. Rav Moshe, in parentheses, in his tshuva writes, and unless it's direct, and if it's not directly causing harm, then I wouldn't be allowed to abort. It's an interesting flip. So that's within the Rambam's position, that's Rav Moshe's position. Rav Moshe clearly says, Rav Moshe was dealing, this was before, apparently, when these two were written, it was a lot before Jews were getting genetic testing, or at least certain people were getting genetic testing, and there were apparently a lot of Tay-Sachs babies. And this was, at the Kach, Rav Moshe took his position that if you find out that the woman's carrying a Tay-Sachs baby, she would not be allowed to abort, even though that means that she will give birth to a child that is going to suffer absolutely terribly for the next, whatever it is, 2-3 years, until it dies from Tay-Sachs. That would be Rav Moshe's position.
Does he differentiate on timing? Does he differentiate on, let's say,
So yeah, it's a good question in general whether or not you can. I'll make a comment about it. Okay, if I go over my half hour, by the way, it's your guys' fault, not mine. there is the question about whether or not I can count. The classic time is 40 days. Is 40 days still considered? Because the Gemara calls 40 days after conception ma'al ba'alma, just whatever water in general or some sort of substance or something. That's not real pregnancy. So people take that, Rav Oldenburg most famously, but other people as well, take that to say there's any prohibition would only start after 40 days. It would not be before the 40 days. I don't think Rav Moshe, if I recall correctly, does not make that distinction. He thinks that it would apply across the board. It doesn't make a difference if it's pre or post the 40 days. I'm pretty sure that's right. I don't think I'm misquoting him. But there are people that make that argument. I will say, for the people that do make that argument, it's interesting because 40 days halachically is different than 40 days medically. Right? 40 days medically, the way we count, the way we date gestation in general, right, is from the last at least one of the ways we date, right, is from the last menses, right, the last time the woman had a period. Halachically, we're counting, I assume, from time of either fertilization or when the egg gets implanted. The Gemara does not make a distinguish between the two because I don't think they knew what the difference between those two things were. But in theory, that would add another week for me, right? In theory, if I assume that the Gemara says 40 days means once the egg gets implanted inside the uterus, I now end up with an extra 3 weeks over what I would call medically 40 days. Right, because I have my 2 weeks that I don't count because that was before the woman actually started ovulating, and then I could probably have about a week or so, 5 days, 7 days. It's been a while since I had to do OB. 5 to 7 days until the egg actually travels, right? Gets fertilized and actually travels, gets implanted in the uterus, right? So I have about 3 weeks more that I can add to it halachically before I end up with the same 40 days that we would call medically. All right, so I have more time. But anyway, I don't think Rav Moshe would make that distinction. Rav Oldenburg, speaking about him, he's on the other side of this argument. He assumes, he's very flexible about most of these conversations and about your conversation as well, you know, when it comes to the rape situation, or even if we're talking about a situation where a woman may not necessarily, again, he's careful in how he phrases it, where he doesn't say, you know, a woman just doesn't want to have a baby right now, so she gets an abortion, that's okay. But he's very flexible with how close he's going to get to that line. There's a line somewhere that he doesn't want to cross. It's unclear where that line is. But he basically assumes the whole thing's derabanan anyway. Most Rishonim don't say like the Rambam. Most Rishonim don't assume that this is murder. They assume it's something else. Maybe it's Chabala. Maybe it's just wounding. Maybe it's just, you know, wasting some sperm here or there. That's not really such a big deal. And so it'll be okay. He's very flexible when it comes to allowing women to get an abortion under many circumstances. The sort of middle of the road position is Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, right? Rav Shlomo Zalman basically says it depends. He's a lot more flexible than Rav Moshe would be. But he might not necessarily be willing to go as far as Rav Waldenberg goes. I think Rav Shlomo Zalman would still think that there's some sort of deraisa here. It's not just a derabanan, so he's not that derabanans aren't important, but that he'll give it a little bit more more weight. He'll take it more into consideration before just saying you can pursue an abortion. So it depends a little bit. I met Steinberg once. I was speaking with him outside YU, and I was just giving a shiur on abortion, so I was asking him about what his thoughts were about all of this, and he told me that it's one of the reasons you want to talk to Rav Steinberg a lot is because he hung out with Shlomo Zalman a lot. And in case you don't know, Shlomo Zalman is without a doubt the greatest posek that ever lived, in my humble opinion. But he hung out with Shlomo Zalman a lot. He told me, so he was sitting around with Shlomo Zalman's office once, and this couple comes in and asks if he can get an abortion or not. So, and Rav Shlomo Zalman apparently tells him, go to Rav Waldenberg. So, Rav Steinberg asks him, you know the answer. Why do you feel the need to send somebody else? I think it depends. And I think it really depends on how the person feels. If the woman thinks it's going to be this emotionally difficult for her to have a child at this point, then, yeah, she could probably get an abortion. It'll probably be okay. But I don't really know them all that well. I'm not sure how comfortable I am with saying that. Rav Waldenberg will say it's okay. You should go to him. But anyway, you end up with like a lot of flexibility depending on which one of these positions you think like. So, let's go back to our question. And again, let's try to we'll recap our situation. Right, this is a woman has her 20 weeks. She's getting a full fetal scan, and she finds out that this kid's IUGR. He has bilateral cerebral hemorrhage, his corpus callosum dysplasia, echogenic bowel, poor diastolic flow in the umbilical cord. This fetus is not doing great, right? But basically, a couple different things are going to happen I'm just quickly repeating for anybody. I don't think everybody's here in the beginning, right? But basically, a couple different things could happen, right? One is this fetus is going to die sometime during this pregnancy. Two is that this fetus will actually make it to the end of pregnancy and then will die during childbirth. Or three, this fetus will actually survive childbirth somehow, and then will probably die shortly thereafter. They're not going to make it all that long. This fetus is not in great condition. What do you do in this situation? First of all, as a plug for all doctors, this woman that went over and asked me this question did not realize the implications of the question when she came over to me. She thought that what the physician was telling her, the question that she was asking me, she didn't even process enough to realize that she was asking me about abortion. The question she thought she was asking me was, like, what resources are there available to help take care of a developmentally challenged child? That's the question she thought she was asking me. She didn't realize that what the OBs were telling her was that this thing wasn't going to survive. It's just a question of when, right? So when you think about these different positions, you can end up with a couple of different possibilities, right? And one question you want to ask is, right now this fetus is alive. Right, the fetus has a heartbeat. Right, question right now is, can I kill this fetus? Can I inject some KCL into the heart and kill it, and then basically get it out? Or do I have to wait for it to die on its own? Potentially, meaning that this one will actually have to go through childbirth and actually give birth to this baby. That's the first question. Right, so let's think about our three different positions. According to Waldenberg, this is obvious. Right, I can easily, no question about it. I can kill the fetus. I can terminate the pregnancy, and and move on from there. According to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, again, it sounds like most likely he would tell me that it's okay as well. Going to a Moshe, I think, might be interesting. Right? Because classically, according to a Moshe, if the fetus is not causing direct harm to the baby, then I can't do the mother, then I can't do anything, right? I'm not allowed to intervene at this point. However, right, there's something that's interesting about this particular situation. Right now, when the fetus is alive, it's true, they're not causing any direct harm to the baby. But if the mother doesn't go ahead and actually do an abortion and actually allow the OB to stop the fetus's heart, right, this fetus, more likely than not, will probably die during pregnancy. Right, it's lucky if it makes it that far, the point of actual childbirth. Right, once this thing dies during pregnancy, it now poses a risk to the mother. There's basically a bunch of dead tissue hanging on to the mother. It's the cause of a whole bunch of things, as we all know. Right, according to a Moshe, can I maybe make the argument that true, right now, this thing won't cause harm to the mother, but it may cause harm to the mother because nobody's doing serial ultrasounds on this woman. Every 2 days, they're going in and checking again, going into her OB and checking again to see whether or not the fetus's heart is still working. It's a little ridiculous, right? So it potentially does pose a threat to the mother's life. Can I maybe, even according to Moshe's position, assume that it's okay to abort this fetus? I'm not sure. I'm just posing the question. But I could potentially hear that even within Rav Moshe's position, someone who maintains that you have to go that far maybe would give more allowance in this particular situation and allow for an abortion. The other thing that's also interesting about this particular situation that's not abortion specifically related but does become relevant in a situation like this is there are two ways. Once, if you terminate the pregnancy or if the fetus dies on its own, there are two ways to get this fetus out, right? One is D&E, right, where you actually evacuate the fetus, and the other one is to induce labor, and the woman will actually give birth naturally. The pros and cons of both of those things is D&E is safer and would allow the woman to, poses less risk for future pregnancies. All right, those are the pros for the D&E. The pros for natural delivery is for a lot of people that went through this traumatic experience. This is, you know, quite a traumatic experience. It helps them cope with it with the termination of the pregnancy. Right, they're now able to just emotionally, you know, going through the pain of labor helps them cope with the fact that they had to go through this. It's like their way of being able to say goodbye to the fetus. Right, that's how they can cope. So you have two viable medical options. But one poses less risk than the other. So if you're going to be a cold statistician about this, maybe you'd make the case that it's usher to do the natural delivery, and you have to do the evacuation, the D&E instead. So I would argue for two reasons that that's definitely not true. Number one is psychological pain. It's a famous Tosfot, but we pass them like this in Halacha. Psychological pain, psychological trauma is considered a disease, is considered sick from a halachic perspective. If so, this woman being allowed to say goodbye to this to her fetus in this way is a way for her to cope. Is the refuah? It's the way for her to get healed from this disease, quote unquote, for lack of a better term, right? From this emotional traumatic experience. So in that case, it would make sense that she's allowed to pursue a treatment, even if it has a little bit more risk, that will, again, quote unquote, cure her disease. That's number one. Disease also, quote unquote. The other reason is because I think we also have to think, and this is something in general when we're discussing these sort of issues, becomes very complicated when you're trying to compare a halachic reality to a halachic theory to a medical reality. And that is when we talk about percentages in medicine and we talk about percentages in halacha, we're very rarely talking about the same degree. Right? For us, a procedure that has 2% risk, 5% risk, 10% risk, that's a lot of risk. Right, and that is incredibly significant, right? But for halachically speaking, we usually don't find those sort of numbers. The only time you find numbers that are even close to that is if you're talking about chametz on Pesach, right? And we say it needs to be 1 in 1,000. That's the percentage, right, of how little chametz you can have inside your to be able to eat it on Pesach, inside your food to be able to eat it on Pesach. But otherwise, when we discuss statistics in halacha, the conversations are usually pretty simple, right? We're talking about rov, we're talking about, I don't know, maybe a little bit more than a rov, maybe a miyot hamatzuri, right? Something that usually does happen, something that usually doesn't happen. But these numbers are usually much, much higher than the medical risk that we're discussing when we talk about a procedure being risky. And so I don't think that halachically, even though medically one procedure, one option is riskier than the other, halachically speaking, though, there is no difference between those two things. The risk is so minute from a halachic perspective that there really is, it's not even considered risky in the first place. So, I think basically for our situation, where we're talking about a case where the fetus is probably not going to make it, and again, can potentially pose some harm, according to Rav Waldenberg, according to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, according to most people, they would agree that this woman is allowed to pursue an abortion. I think you can even make the argument that if you're within the Rav Moshe Feinstein camp, you could still make the argument that this can potentially cause a direct harm to the woman, and therefore you may be allowed to pursue an abortion as well, even according to their position. And as far as how to actually fully terminate the pregnancy between the two options, I think even though D&E might be medically a little bit safer, but either one would be halachically, either dini or inducing labor, would both be halachically totally justified, both for, because, again, it's the sort of refuah, it's the treatment for the woman's psychological pain, and also because the statistical risk is not significant from a halachic perspective. Any questions, thoughts? All my shiur, by the way, since starting residency, have been incredibly depressing. This is nothing.
If she were to survive, if the baby were to survive to term, like, sorry, birth, to the point where, like, it would definitely be born and then probably die right afterwards, would that opinion no longer be valid since the baby wouldn't, like, terminate in the middle of pregnancy and cause, like, that?
Yeah, so I guess, like, if someone only finds this out at week 39 or whatever it is, then, yeah, according to Moshe, it probably doesn't. According to a bunch of Feinstein, this that argument probably wouldn't work. He would probably say you're not allowed to terminate the pregnancy. You'd have to let it be born.
Mm-hmm. I saw that recent case of a woman in Texas who's having an issue getting an abortion. I think she had a similar problem with her child, where, like, I think the brain was not fully formed. But her main issue, I think, was that if she had a previous history of C-section, and they said that if she gave birth to this baby again, it would also have to be C-section, and would then, like, probably prohibit her from ever having children again. So, like, in that case, do you think that a mother's ability to have children if she wants to grow her family would supersede the quote-unquote life of this baby that will die afterwards?
So again, according to most poskim, you'd be fine, even without that consideration, by the fact that this baby will die shortly after birth, you'd be allowed to terminate the pregnancy, irrespective of anything else. But according to Amosha, it would be the only question. The stakes are really, really high, according to Amosha, right? Because if you're talking about, like, this is murder, that's the way you're thinking about it, right? Then it becomes much more difficult to say it's okay. In that situation, the way you might be able to get around it is, if you would argue that having to undergo a C-section is putting the mother's life at risk. So irrespective of the fact that, you know, that would later, what I'm saying is, the factor that she would later not be able to have kids, according to Moshe, would not be relevant, right? It would be completely irrelevant. But the fact that she has to undergo a C-section might actually be enough of a consideration to say, well, that puts the woman's life at risk, just the fact that, I don't know, you have to go under more anesthesia or whatever they're doing the C-section, and have to go undergo the procedure. So maybe that's putting her life more at risk than you would be comfortable with halachically. And so then maybe I'd be able to terminate the pregnancy earlier. The weird thing about C-sections, when you think about them from a halachic perspective, is if you just go back to, you know, primary sources, no woman ever got a second C-section. Right, a C-section was basically a way of saying, I'm killing the woman and I'm saving the baby. Right, that's what a C-section was. No one ever survived one of those. So that's not, you know, so you don't really have any primary sources that talk about C-sections in any, you know, anything about subsequent to that pregnancy.
Would you say that the risks of any, like, safe procedure today, the risks that come with that, does that small level of risk supersede the threshold of risk that would permit, you know, whoever the most stringent opinion is for when you could do an abortion? Do you know what I mean?
I'm not sure.
So, meaning, you were saying how, like, the percentages in halacha and medicine are very different. So, and you gave the example of the chametz, 1 in 1,000, right? So, if you look at even the safest deliveries on the consent form, there's always, like, you know, there is a risk for death. There is a risk for bleeding.
Right.
So my question is that minimal risk that they put on that consent form, is that enough of a risk for these rabbis to say, like, that's enough for us to consider it like a road death case?
So you mean what you mean is pregnancy is dangerous.
Yeah.
Right? Childbirth is dangerous.
Yeah.
And so I can make the
a risk for death.
Right.
It's non-zero.
Right. So obviously, I mean, the reason why they clearly don't think like that, I mean, they were making that argument about women that were pregnant, right? So they're aware of that risk. This is actually, you bring up a good point. Whenever I was thinking about these issues, I always get confused about that point, right? Because you're right, right? Pregnancy is dangerous, and especially if we go back to when these primary sources were written, pregnancy was really, really, really dangerous, right? Forget a risk of hemorrhage or whatever it is. It's, you know, the risk of everything that they came up with was tenfold or more. But they clearly don't consider that risk when they're thinking about these issues, right? Because right. they're not calling just pregnancy a risk. It's actually interesting. There's a Meshech Chachma that says about, he asks in Bereshis, right, the men are giving the mitzvah to have kids, women are not giving a mitzvah to have kids. So he says, why are women not given a mitzvah to have kids? He says, because I cannot command someone to do something that is dangerous for them. For a man, it's not dangerous to have a kid. For a woman, it's dangerous to have a kid. So there's a mitzvah for them to help the man have a kid, because apparently men cannot do it on their own. But there is no mitzvah specifically for women to have kids for that reason. But again, because it's the way the argument is usually phrased in terms of like, these are just natural processes. The natural way of life. This is how things go.
Right.
Women give birth. It might be risky, but we're accepting that risk.
And then, do you ever... I'm not sure if someone touched on this, but do you look at the child's like viability post birth in determining whether you can abort them? Like, meaning if a kid will die within 10 hours of being born, and it's known, the doctor says, unless there's a miracle, this baby will not survive for more than 10 hours after you cut the umbilical cord. Does that factor into the decision?
So, I mean, most of these things were written in response to, like, the Tay-Sachs babies.
Right.
Right? So Moshe was the one that, even in that situation, and it's more than 10 hours, it's a couple of years.
Yeah.
Moshe says you have to keep them alive. But everybody else was pretty much comfortable with saying, you know, you could abort it in that situation.
So for the people that are comfortable with it, what is the extent? Can you say that this baby will die after 120 years, so therefore you can...
Yeah, so
it's the threshold?
Yeah, so the threshold is complicated. I don't know if anyone gives a specific time. It's also probably also depends on, you know, what does that quality of life look like? I mean, it's also a question when you talk about, you know, can you abort? You found out that the fetus is Down syndrome, has Down syndrome, right? Are you allowed to abort? You know, a lot of Down syndrome kids that live for quite a nice amount of time and they have a nice life, right? They're productive. They may not be the same. Yeah. So, you know, in theory, based off your argument, they probably have a shorter lifespan than everybody else.
Right.
So based off that argument, you might be able to say, well, we can abort them. I would change the argument different. I would change the argument a little bit. I would say that, you know, Down syndrome kids also have a very high risk of a whole bunch of other diseases.
Right.
And you can spot some of them with fetal scans, and you can, you know, be able to see what's going on. So that could potentially also change the equation. Again, I think a lot of this is going to be couple dependent. And rabbi dependent, so it depends on who you ask.
Do you know what Rotender holds on abortion? I
mean, you hear of Tendler in general thinks like Rav Moshe, though I think
really?
Rav Tendler's a Moshe's son-in-law.
No,
famously,
I know he's son-in-law, but he's much more. If you, like, I took his classes at YU, and he's much more. His views on, like, Matisse Bepin and all those things are much more, like, modern medical.
Yeah, I actually don't. I think he's a little bit more lenient with abortion. I don't remember how far he goes.
Right. Does anyone know? Like, I've asked for a study.
He's written about it.
Oh, he has?
I'm sure. Yeah, he definitely has an article in it.
Do you know?
I'm not sure he's written about it.
He hasn't written about it? I thought he has somewhere.
He for sure. He loves.
There's no way.
He loves brain.
Yeah, he's definitely written about it somewhere. The only question is where.
And what about abortion and just like. For like spitball, if we're like, I'm just trying to.
Yeah, you're trying to challenge me. Go for it.
Shalom bias. Like, you're allowed to do a lot of things for shalom bias. Even, like, things that, like, people were, like, when it comes to, like, desecrating things. You know, there's a lot of leniencies, obviously, when it comes to shalom bias. So, what is. Abortions,
so when you tell me you want to do an abortion because of shalom bias, I have alarm bells go off in my head.
Not,
because
I'll
tell you
shalom
why.
Bias, I don't mean shalom. I mean more in the sense of like, take the Tay-Sachs child, right? Tay-Sachs is going to have a toll on the family. It's going to have a toll on the couple.
Yeah.
It's going to have a toll on the finances that go into caring for the child. I mean shalom bias from like.
From that perspective. For just a difficult circumstance for family to go through.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was actually going to make a different argument. I don't think I was going to say what you thought I was going to say. I was just going to say, if this is caused shalom bias, I'm concerned about a deeper shalom. Like, it sounds like one person wants to have a kid and the other one doesn't, and someone put a hole in something,
no.
Or forgot to take a pill or whatever.
Very much like,
but
like, Tay-Sachs is a great example.
Yeah, so that's what they were talking about, right? Voldemort was saying that's a good enough justification. Even with
Rav
Moshe would say, no, right, Rav Moshe thinks it's the threshold is murder, so the answer is no. Yeah,
okay.
Even if it means, you know, this family's not going to stay together after this, you're talking about murder.
Right.
So it wouldn't be okay. Good?
Yeah.
All right.